This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, 15th of June, 2018. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. Liz and Gordon Legg have edited the extracts this week. Now we'll begin with the usual regular notices, and the first is to say, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 020-380-273-473. That's 020-380-273-473. Now, as you listen to the recording, remember you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And just one more reminder, this is for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. That's www.winchestertalkingnews.com. You just need to go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, so the most recent is first on the list. And so, let's look at this week's edition of the Chronicle. Our readers today are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
Welcome back from your long holiday, Richard. And Peter Walker.
Hello.
Now, this is a partially new lineup for the week. Richard, as I've said, welcome back from your holiday. But Peter, thank you for taking on the vacancy created by Jerry Tough. We'd all like to say a huge thank you to Jerry for her sterling contribution to Talking Newspapers via this medium for so many years, and we will miss her. And finally, I am your presenter, Ros Lydiard. Excuse me. And so on with the news. The leading headlines this week are 20 not plenty in trial, man finds WW1 bombshell in city centre river, and the final one is fire victim, I've just lost everything I own. And the first headline story from you, Claire, please.
20 not plenty in trial. Police have been criticised for failing to properly enforce 20 miles an hour speed limits after a trial showed motorists speeding up in some parts of Winchester. County councillors say there is no point in the speed limits without the fear of prosecution. However, the force says it does not routinely enforce 20 mile speed limits as a matter of course due to finite resources. It also claims these limits are largely self-enforcing. This comes after it was revealed that a trial of 20 miles an hour limits across Hampshire led to speeds actually increasing in some areas. The pilot scheme, which began in 2014, involved installing signage in 14 locations in a bid to improve safety. But four of these, Stanmore, Micheldever, Chilbolton and Dummer, actually saw an increase in driver speeds. Following the meeting, Liberal Democrat Martin Todd and Conservative Jan Warwick, both of whom are also Winchester City Councillors, said that more needed to be done than just put up signs. Councillor Todd said, "The lesson from other places is if you do 20-mile-an-hour limits properly, it makes quite a difference to accident rates, speed, and also the amount of confidence people have in cycling and walking. If you do it half-baked, then it doesn't do so well. Councillor Warwick added, "The message I took is that if you really want to bring down the speed limit, you need to put in other traffic calming measures." The meeting of the County Council's Economy and Transport Committee heard from a number of councillors that limits need to be enforced more. Councillor Gary Hughes said, "I am a great believer that there is no point in having limits if you do not enforce them. We, the drivers, spend so much time looking at our speedometers that it is a distraction from driving in a straight manner. The idea that we are going to do this, but we are not going to enforce it, shows that there is no point in doing it at all." Nevertheless, Superintendent Simon Dodd said, "Department of Transport guidance details that 20 miles an hour speed limits, as with all speed limits, should be set at a level where they are largely self-enforcing. Speed limits, including 20 miles an hour restrictions, are more frequently adhered to by motorists when the existing conditions and design of the road lead to mean traffic speeds being compliant with the proposed speed limit." He added, "Hampshire Constabulary will not routinely enforce 20 mile an hour speed limits as a matter of course. With finite resources, our enforcement of all traffic legislation is directed by a threat, risk and harm approach. Where there is evidence to support that a road or given location presents a heightened risk, this is where our officers will be deployed." The study also found that only three of the pilot areas, Cherbourg Road, Wallington and Winnall, recorded an average of below 20 miles an hour, despite decreases in speeds in 10 locations. Council officers admitted that average speeds below the new limit were in areas where averages were already under 20 miles an hour. Adrian Gray, head of highways at the council, said, "The decision to implement this pilot was part of our traffic management scheme in the pursuit of casualty reduction. However, we have found that the impact on traffic speeds were largely minimal." He added, "With a county the size of Hampshire, the police cannot enforce everything."
Man finds World War I bombshell in city centre river. A bomb alert was sparked in Winchester city centre after a man discovered an unexploded shell in the river. Mike Hamilton was wading through the water by Water Lane, unsuspectingly looking for anything that might be of interest, when he stumbled across the unexploded device on Friday. Police arrived at the scene and closed a number of streets in the city in response to the discovery. Mr. Hamilton, a proofreader from Chandler's Ford, said, "I was combing the riverbed when I found something that looked like an oversized bottle about 2 foot long. I gave it a kick, and then I saw the crimping on it and realized it was a World War I shell. We then ran and called the police." He added, "There's not usually much in this stretch of river. We weren't expecting it at all." The incident, which took place at about 1:30 on the River Itchen in the Derngate area, sparked a number of road closures lasting into the evening rush hour. Police initially closed part of Water Lane, Blue Ball Hill and Wales Street before extending the cordon further down Water Lane, which runs alongside the river. Some residents were evacuated from their homes. Shortly before the evening rush hour, officers closed further roads, and as a result, Winchester City Council urged drivers to avoid the city centre. South Central Ambulance crews and Hampshire firefighters also attended the scene as a precaution. There were no reports of any injuries. The Army bomb disposal took the shell away and blew it up on farmland near Matterley Bowl.
Fire victim. I've lost everything I own. Those are the words of 54-year-old Mark Attenborough, who just days after moving into a caravan on a site near Bishop's Waltham, came home from work to find all of his belongings destroyed in a fire. 35 firefighters raced to Shedfield Equestrian Centre, Botley Road, on Thursday morning after a generator caught fire. After refuelling the generator, site worker Gregoros Guzmanski then came out to see the caravan up in flames and alerted the fire service. Now, Mr. Attenborough, who works in landscaping, has said that he has lost all of his possessions after just moving into the caravan following a breakdown in his previous relationship. He said, "I had moved in there a few days ago. I was in the process of sorting insurance. I had some documents sent over that I was going to read. I have lost everything I own. It all went up in flames, and now I have to start from scratch." As previously reported, fire crews managed to save the blaze from spreading further, with a full propane gas tank sat next to the caravan, which was kept cool throughout the fire. Mr. Attenborough added, "The generator was in the shed. I had a couple of problems with it, but of course I never expected this. It's hard to know what to do next. I'm just trying to talk to some solicitors and sort my way through what I can. I left for work early, as I work at the RAF base in Odium, and they were having trouble contacting me. I came back, and the firefighters had already left. All that was left there were the remains."
Thank you very much, everyone. And now we're going to move on to death notices, and I will start them. Bud, Beryl Mary Bud, died peacefully on the 21st of June, aged 89.
Dean, Doreen Alice, née Pither Dean, formerly of Kingsworthy, died peacefully on the passed away peacefully at Willow Court, Andover, aged 91.
Dowland, Patricia Ann Dowland, died unexpectedly in Bristol on the 29th of May, 2018.
Griffin, Owen Griffin, sadly passed away unexpectedly at home in Bramdean on the 27th of May, one day before his 90th birthday.
Inglis, James Jim Inglis, sadly passed away on the 6th of June at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital.
Pierce, Gladys May Edith Pierce, fell peacefully asleep, aged 86 years.
Sowden, Norman Sowden, sadly passed away on Wednesday the 30th of May, aged 94.
Strong, Jeffrey, Jeff, Brian Strong, passed away after a long illness with Parkinson's disease, aged 65 years.
Toogood, Godfrey, Jeff, Leonard Toogood, passed away peacefully at Southmead Hospital, Bristol, on the 1st of June, aged 81 years.
Wilmot, Nigel Douglas Wilmot, on 4th of June, at home, aged 58.
Thank you, everyone. Now we have Christian Comment, which is contributed this week by Liz Tatham, and it's for Claire to read to us, please.
Liz Tatham has headed this, "God has no hands but yours." Being in the moment is not one of my best subjects. Whilst I can enjoy or even be overwhelmed by nature, art, music or beautiful, awesome things, I'm not very good at letting go of background worries, thoughts, places to be, things to do. Perhaps you know what I mean. So I have surprised myself this last couple of weeks by having a few in the moments. Early morning dew on the cobwebs in the fields with my puppy charging through them. The evening smell of honeysuckle in the garden while I'm getting the washing in. Sitting quietly in the garden and noticing the birds nest building in the hedges. And all without thinking of anything else much. Dancing to a band in a garden charity picnic, all of us singing noisily and looking around at friends who helped me through a very difficult loss a few years ago, and wondering how we ever come through dark and difficult times and are able to dance again. I may be privileged compared to many who live in terrible and awful situations. I have a garden, a puppy, a field nearby to walk in. I can afford to go to a charity picnic, but I can still suffer and worry about all sorts of things. I have an A star in fretting. Most of it comes from loving others and being concerned for their well-being. It makes me wonder how people cope with being in a war zone or on the sea with their children on a migrant boat or any of the other horrific scenarios imagined when I'm lying awake at night. Perhaps they just hope and pray that someone will come to their rescue, an avenging army, a rescue boat, a water drop, someone who cares about their children and will give them asylum. Jesus said we should not worry, consider the lilies of the field. God made them. Does he not worry about us more than the flowers, that sparrow that fell? Often we wonder, so where is my rescue? Why has this happened to me? I don't understand why evil things happen or why we suffer. It's a mystery and the nature of the world we live in, but often it's because of what we do to each other. I consider those friends who helped me along in my difficult time, walked with me until I could walk by myself again, and wonder if I could help others more. St. Teresa's famous prayer, God has no hands but yours, no feet on earth but yours, and so on. Perhaps that is what is meant in that Luke gospel about the lilies of the field, Luke 12:27-29, that for us who have strength and resources to help others, God can work through us so that they can become strong and in their turn be a gift to others who suffer. Maybe some more in the moments will stop my fretting and enable my action. Les Tatham.
Thank you very much, Claire. And we are moving on to letters to the editor. And as ever, there is a mixed bag of letters this week, and we've selected quite a few for you this time. And Peter is going to start us off with the first. Thank you very much.
This one entitled Sun Lane Set 2. Sir, there is not a need for another industrial site in Alsford. Patricia Walker loftily pronounces in a letter to your newspaper last week. How would she know? Has she spoken to local industries and businesses who do indeed complain about the lack of suitable facilities in this part of Hampshire? The Sun Lane industrial estate will replace the one on the Dean, which dates back to the 19th century and is being gradually sold off. The proposed location is the best that is available in Alsford and will help ensure the town remains more than just a retirement place or wealthy Londoners' place in the country. It is a far better location than the Dean, just a stone's throw from West Street. A large number of the opponents of the Sun Lane development have known for decades that the land will eventually be developed. After all, their homes were green fields only a few decades ago. Their opposition is based on NIMBYism, pure and simple, topped up with the anti-industry snobbery that your leader focused on a few weeks back. This from J.D. Giles, Romsey Road, Winchester.
Keith Barrett of Alsford says, Sir, as the decision on the controversial Sun Lane development in Alsford moves ever nearer, concerns regarding its impact upon the safety of local school children persist. The scheme, as designed, will see hundreds of additional vehicle movements past the Sun Hill schools during the morning rush hour. I fear that children would inevitably be put at risk in such circumstances. given the ongoing problems at the A33 Cart and Horses Junction, there are inevitably concerns about the ability of the authorities to ensure that safe arrangements are put in place for road users and pedestrians alike. I hope that councillors charged with examining the Sun Lane plans will think carefully about the safety of all concerned. This is the moment to ensure that such plans are suitably detailed and watertight. Those councillors need to ensure that corners aren't being cut. Keith Barrett, Appledown Close, Alsford.
This letter, headed Sun Hill Plans, is from Paul McGee. My daughter will soon be attending Sun Hill Infant School in Alsford, and I believe that if the application is granted, there will be a massive increase in traffic flow past the school during the rush hours. Going past the school during rush hour is already a nightmare, and increasing the traffic will only make things even more dangerous. The increase in pollution and the effects it will have on the children going to school is also a concern. The large increase in traffic flow on roads such as Sun Lane, Nursery Road and Tichborne Down is worrying, as these roads are already down to a single lane in places due to parking on the roads. If these roads struggle to cope with the current amount of daily traffic, I dread to think what they will be like if the application is granted. I've heard that the developer is not even providing any traffic calming or mitigation measures for any of the developments surrounding roads, which I find staggering. Surely they should provide such things. Paul McGee, Benenden Green, Alsford.
And now a change of subject. This from Patrick Davis, entitled Still Secretive. Sir, I spent a very depressing evening listening to the alleged scrutiny of the revisions proposed to the Central Winchester Regeneration Supplementary Planning Document. At no point did any councillor refer to the 195-page document setting out all the public comments on the consultation draft. Had they even read it? It summarises the public comments and either recommends leaving the original wording or sometimes making amendments in line with the public comments. Nowhere in that long document is there any reference to the recent legal challenge or the rationale behind the decision to weaken the wording of the document to delete most, quote, requirements. It falsely claims that, quote, no change is proposed in many places where the revised SPD document actually turns, quote, requires into weaker wording. The councillors of both parties, Conservatives and Liberal Democrats, currently on the City Council, have totally failed to remember the lessons of the Claire Lloyd-Jones independent report in February 2016, when she was fiercely critical of the working methods of the previous informal policy group for this area because of its operations, quote, behind closed doors, unquote, with no public minutes. Why did this recent IPG meet in private for many of its meetings to discuss the critical changes to this document? Both parties were on this group and actively colluded in this secrecy. Why were the public not told about the legal challenge? I have asked the council to see details of how these changes were put forward and the justification for them. Over many years, I have consistently challenged the way the council has used these IPGs as a way of deciding contentious issues behind closed doors. If public confidence is to be restored in the way the City Council operates, we must be shown all the secret papers about this project. This from Patrick Davis, Staple Gardens.
And Kate McIntosh asks more questions on the same theme. Several questions arise from the passage of the Central Winchester Regeneration document through the Overview and Scrutiny Panel on June the 4th, chronicled June the 7th. Firstly, following the recent local government elections, which saw the Conservative majority for Winchester District reduced to one member, and in consideration of the fact that Winchester City is itself overwhelmingly represented by Lib Dem members, One might hope that the division of party seats on this committee would be evenly balanced. Otherwise, how can it pretend to be more than a subcommittee to cabinet? Secondly, in this second attempt to arrive at an appropriate and viable development for central Winchester, the City Council has employed a reputable firm who have engaged in meaningful consultation, which has gone some way to repair the total public cynicism generated by their earlier mishandling of this development opportunity. Why then are they balking at the first sign of opposition from London and Henley, now known as Three, and proposing to emasculate the SDP to the point that it becomes a worthless document? The portion of the site in the ownership of this toxic company is tiny, and a major development could well proceed without their say so. I would contend that the primary function of any local authority, and particularly its planning arm, must be to defend the public interest. In seeking to amend the local planning document, wording from directive shoulds to permissive mays, they are waving the white flag ahead of any engagement with wily developers. Doormats aren't in it. Kate McIntosh, MBE, RIBA, West End Terrace, Winchester.
Keith Lehman says, "The City of Winchester Trust, together with other organisations and many individuals, has in good faith participated in the 14-month-long public consultation exercise on the Central Winchester Regeneration Area. We now learn at the end of the public consultation process that the City Council, as you report, chronicled June the 7th, has received legal advice that the Supplementary Planning Document, SPD, should not be too prescriptive and be flexible. This advice should have been sought and informed at the beginning of the consultation exercise, so that expectations of what an SPD could achieve could be reduced. This is a really disappointing end to an exercise that had been so ably conducted by John Thompson and partners. We would anticipate that it will also add to the disillusionment of the citizens of Winchester." Keith Lehman, Chairman, City of Winchester Trust, Upper Brook Street, Winchester.
And now another change of topic, this from Robin Stewart of St Paul's Anglican Church in Q8, entitled Memories of Stained Glass Window. "Sir, I represent the St Paul's Anglican Church in Q8. This November we are celebrating the 70th anniversary of the church in Q8. You are very unlikely to be aware that the three east end windows at St Paul's Church originated from a church in Winchester. Our local records are scant, but we believe that in the 1960s, the chaplain in Q8 at the time, the Reverend Harvey Royden Phillips, acquired the windows from St Peter's Church in Winchester and had them reset in the modern setting of St Paul's Q8. The window acquired additional significance after the Gulf War, when it was damaged during the conflict, restored through the help of the British military, and rededicated with the following inscription: This window is rededicated to all those who lost their lives in the invasion, occupation and liberation of Q8 in 1990-1991. St Paul's Church is organising a special service in November to celebrate our 70th anniversary in the presence of the Bishop and a number of dignitaries and commemorate significant events it has witnessed. As such, we are trying to re-establish connections with individuals and organisations who held significant past links with St Paul's. Robin Stewart."
"Road to nowhere," says Chris Gillam. "Sir, it's good news that the National Park objects to the capacity increase proposed for the A34M3 junction. It must stick to its guns and ignore our MP's blandishments. Far from recognising an imagined strategic importance to the nation, we need to consider the real priorities. The Prime Minister, in the recent 25-year Vision for the Environment, states, from reducing our carbon emissions to leading international action to protect endangered species, the UK is an international champion for the protection of our planet. Fine words. But this is a PM who has backed fracking for ever more fossil fuel, airport expansion, a fuel duty freeze, simultaneously raising costs and reducing reliability of public transport, and massive road building. David Beggs's recent report highlights the growing externalities of what Thatcher was pleased to call the great car economy. Using Highways England, HE, values for human lives, the health cost to the nation of air pollution alone is comparable to the total tax take on road vehicles. So why is it of strategic importance to encourage more of this highly subsidised behaviour through capacity increase? The case for the M3 junction is not about relieving the bad effects of traffic, but it's about providing capacity to increase it, specifically seeing a benefit in increasing HGV movements by 33%. Highways England have had a detailed plan since the early 1990s to widen the cutting through Twyford Down. The current scheme is clearly intended to provide the pressure to bring that about. That should be anathema to the National Park Authority. It's recently objected to the awful scheme through the National Park at Arundel, and HE has plans for further assaults on the southern flanks of the park. It must take heed of the Prime Minister's statement of strategic priority. This is a national plan of action with international ambition. As well as setting an example for others to follow in our treatment of the countryside, rivers, coastlines and air, we will also bring the UK's international influence to bear in pursuit of a cleaner and safer world. Chris Gillam, Upper High Street, Winchester.
Empty shops. I walked through Winchester city centre last Thursday, June the 7th, around 5:30 p.m. for the first time in months, and was alarmed to see so many empty shops. Whatever strategy the town planners have to improve the city, can I strongly recommend moving the High Street Market? The street is too narrow and the businesses are hidden behind these temporary stalls. I nearly missed the new flagship restaurant, The Ivy, which is effectively hidden. Given the efforts to preserve the architecture of the High Street, what on earth is the point if the key historic street is so badly cluttered with temporary market outlets? Couldn't they be moved to a less iconic street in the centre? John Burr, Broadchalk Down, Badger Farm, Winchester.
This one is entitled Road Danger. Sir, hundreds of your readers will know to their cost that getting across the Romsey Road from the station to the end of St James's Terrace or the barracks, or vice versa, has become a hazard that no one should be required to undertake. The steady stream of overpowered vehicles streaming either up or down that dangerous road, most of them surpassing the 20 mile an hour speed limit by a large margin, stands in need of an urgent solution. I hope I can join others whose daily journeys have become nearly impossible at that location in stating that traffic lights, road bumps, lollipop personnel or a hefty fine for speedsters or a combination of the above are now very badly needed. This from B. Taylor, West End Terrace.
This is from Mark Rowe, who is Winchester English Democrats Coordinator, and it's called England Dreaming. Sir, there's one word that strikes fear in politicians and political activists' heart. England. As they wish to sweep it under the carpet that we no longer live in a united kingdom, but sadly, a disunited kingdom now. Who fear this? The Tories, as they failed this nation of ours. Labour and Lib Dems, as they fear also that the English Democrats are the only party that puts England first and will make England great again. I urge those who, like me, love England to join the English Democrats and help free England for now and the future, before it's too late. I dream of an England with its own voice in an English Parliament. I dream of an England where common sense rules. I dream of an England without so-called political correctness. I dream of an England not just for me, but for us. Or that is a notion that will lead the world once again, rather than being left behind in a disunited England that is the joke of Europe. If your fellow readers share this dream, then join me in forming an English Democrats branch in Winchester. Winchester is a winnable in any election for the English Democrats, and this is what other parties fear the most. As we are on the rise for England and St George, plus God Save the Queen. To find out more about the English Democrats, feel free to look at the main party website. Also look up Winchester English Democrats on Facebook, and I shall be pleased to hear from you. As you, my fellow readers, are what makes England great, as you are England too. Mark Rowe, Winchester English Democrats, to coordinator, Tapling's Close Week, Winchester.
And thank you all very much indeed. So those were letters to the editor. Now we've got your say. And it won't surprise you to hear that the roving reporter's question to the public this week is, how do they think England will do in that famous football competition? Richard, please.
Yes, so they asked Edward McKenzie, 81, retired factory worker from Totten, who said, I don't really know, to be honest. I think they'll get through the group stages, but I don't think they have a chance of winning. I don't rate Gareth Southgate as a manager either. Gavin Randall, 31, crew trainer from Stanmore Winchester, said, badly. We don't do very well in tournaments. I think we'll get to the quarterfinals with the young team we have. I don't think we've got a quality side like Spain have got. Dave Walker, 56, company director from Cheriton, said, I don't know, but if pressed, I would say the quarterfinals. They lack experience, and if we lost Harry Kane, I don't know who we would have that put the ball to the back of the net. And finally, Craig Mahon, 30, store manager from Winchester, said, oh, really badly. I don't generally watch football, but putting it down to history, we won't get very far. And everyone will be very disappointed.
Oh, dear. That is such a depressing picture. And, Richard, what's your opinion on that?
I don't think I've watched a football match for about 50 years, so I don't really have one.
I think by the end of this session, we will all be football experts. We won't be left alone on it. But thank you very much for that. And so if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air on the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. Or you can email them on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. You could even drop in when you are in Winchester. And now we have Chronicle comment, and the editor's headline this week is, speeding up or is it slowing down? Another interesting coincidence of news. The police have been criticised for failing to adequately enforce 20-mile-an-hour speed limits after a trial showed motorists are now going faster in some parts of Winchester. County councillors say there is no point in the reduced limits without the fear of prosecution. The police says it does not routinely enforce 20-mile-an-hour speed limits as a matter of course due to finite resources. The reduced limit should be self-enforcing. At the same time, as the news of the questionable results of the 20-mile-an-hour limit trial, we also report on the Winchester Cycle Fest and the Criterium. Cycling has long moved away from being a nerdy niche to becoming mainstream, but the growing support for the event shows that many people want to get out of their cars and enjoy a healthier and less polluting lifestyle. So which is it? Is the public champing at the bit to ignore speed limits, or does the Cycle Fest show we long for a simpler way of living? Is society split down the middle, or perhaps are the same people breaking the 20-mile-an-hour speed limit also getting out on their bicycles at the weekend? We don't know. But one thing is crystal clear. The Winchester Transport Study has a big job on its hand to reconcile the two seemingly conflicting stands. By all means, tell us what you think. Write to letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. And it's first person now, and it's Ron Allison on the subject of football. Richard, can you read this one, please?
Yes, and Ron actually writes about a month of football.
Okay.
Words either to gladden or terrify you. Right. The long wait is over, and today the world begins 4 weeks of football, which will end on July the 15th with the World Cup held aloft by the captain of... And that's the question. Will it be Brazil or Belgium, Germany or Argentina? Or what about France? It certainly won't be the host country Russia, nor is it likely to be the promising, indeed talented, but still largely untried team from England. Much of the interest for us will, of course, be in watching us as we move through the group stage onto the quarterfinals, and again the question, how far will England get? That itself raises questions about the English players individually. Will the familiar failing that seemed to afflict so many of their predecessors, the inability to produce their best club form when playing for their country, be seen again in Volgograd, Novgorod or Kaliningrad? Let me duck that one by simply saying, truthfully, this is one for the manager, Gareth Southgate. I'm happy to say, too, that he seems to be doing a very thoughtful, sensible and promising job. If he can get Rashford, Sterling and Kane to carry on where they left off at the end of the last domestic season, at least we should see some goals. Now, I know full well that not all Hampshire Chronicle readers share my enthusiasm for sport and for football in particular. You will not be thrilled at the prospect ahead, but I would recommend you give it a try. Pick a few games featuring the teams likely to prove exciting. Belgium and Argentina come to mind immediately. And if you happen to see Messi and Ronaldo at their best, you'll be in for a treat. The fact that the tournament is in Russia is good for us as television viewers. By and large, the kickoff times are ones with which we are familiar, with England's first match against Tunisia starting at 7 in the evening on Monday, June the 18th. TV coverage by the tournament is shared by BBC and ITV. Apart from the matches themselves, it should be interesting and informative to see the coverage of what else is going on in Russia at the time. President Vladimir Putin will, of course, be hoping that the whole operation will prove to be a massive and positive advert for his country and its achievements. Now, to give the non-footballers a break, assuming you're still with us, a few thoughts on the political and diplomatic scene. Whether or not you are, in Brexit terms, a leaver or a remainer, you must be concerned at the lack of clarity surrounding the UK-EU negotiations. What stage have we reached? Will we be told, or are we all being kept in the dark until just in the nick of time the Prime Minister Theresa May reaches into one of her diplomatic bags and pulls out a signed, sealed and dealed rabbit? I doubt if many of those who voted Leave knew how complicated and involved the way out would prove to be. And now looking overseas, how many of us expected to see a President of the United States set out, so it would seem, to upset as many of America's allies as he possibly could, as quickly as he could. In that regard, it has to be admitted, President Trump is doing very well. Though to be fair, I think I recall him promising to do a lot of this stuff during the election campaign. A worrying thought, if you're not a fan of the Donald, is that what he's doing and saying seems to be going down quite well with his supporters in the States?
And we have a return to Westminster Diary this week. I think Parliament has been quite busy. It's from Steve Bryan, MP for Winchester and Chandlesford. And he's talking about the changing face of Winchester. Peter, please.
One of my favourite books is Look Up Winchester, which is a self-titled tour of Winchester's historic high street above the Eye Line, with stories behind its facades. It's a compelling read and a reminder of how many seasons our high street has witnessed and how it is constantly evolving. Jack Wills was once a picture house. Our newest recruit, the Ivy, was first a draper's, then Debenham's, and then L.K. Bennett, while Cath Kidston was once the White Hart Inn, where the Duke of Wellington, whilst campaigning for an election as an MP, gave a speech from the first floor balcony. Now there's an idea. My point is that a city, which might just have been Arthur's Camelot, is always changing, and that's okay. So it is in this context that we should see the current crossroads, and it does appear to be that, facing our high street. Earlier this month, I attended the Winchester Business Awards, and it was refreshing as always to be among entrepreneurs with a positive mindset, a modern approach to retail and, no coincidence here, thriving businesses. As reported in this paper last week, some are even doing so well, they're branching out across district with new stores. Back in March, I discussed Winchester High Street with Councillor Guy Ashton, and we reckoned that of some 300 shops in the core city centre, a dozen were empty with no sign of a new tenant. That's about 3.7%. The vacancy rate quoted by the BID last month was 3.2%, so decreasing. The national average for empty retail space is nearly four times higher at 12%. There are 9 charity shops, 15 coffee shops and independents, such as the Hambledon, sit alongside familiar national brands. We have TK Maxx, Poundland plus Primark, and a good job too. Winchester is full of young families, including mine, and we use them. I sometimes hear blame for a changing retail environment laid at the door of the City Council around rent and rates, but this doesn't really stack up. Government sets the rates and private landlords, including charities we may support, private individuals that we may even be, and pension funds we rely on, set rent. And behind every retail closure, there's an individual story that explains what happened. For policymakers in government, it's the trend we must spot and, where possible, act upon. The recent rates revaluation has hit many, but of course reflects the prosperity of Winchester, and that's a double-edged sword. It was also long overdue, and that must change, which is why I have supported plans to move to regular revaluations, because we cannot have cliff-edge spikes like 2017 ever again. Yes, there has been a discretionary relief scheme which I pushed Treasury to create, but I remain of the view that the fundamentals of business rates need to change. The new Retail Sector Council is bringing the sector together with government and local councils, making recommendations on the areas that come up time and time again. Those include business rates, where the government have made a clear commitment to make sure that the system is up to date for a world in which people increasingly shop online. A levelling of the playing field would be a good start. I often make time to walk the course in town and spend time popping into shops to see how it's going. What I see is a vibrant high street, not one that is presiding over its own death, but changing for sure. 'Twas ever so, from Steve Bryan.
Thank you very much. Well done, yes. Well, the next three items are from Belgarum. And Claire has the first, please.
Actor, excuse me. Actor lands key role on TV fishing show. An Alsford actor has landed a place on a TV channel during a live 24-hour broadcast on Saturday, June the 23rd. And I have to say, the place was spelt P-L-A-I-C-E. James Murray has been cast for the role after being hooked by the offer of fly fishing on the River Test whilst presenting the Fishing TV's first World Fishing Day. The channel hopes to unite the angling community through the event and reel, R-E-E-L, people into the sport. He will be joined by Chalkstream expert and charity fundraiser Charles Jardine and Sue Shaw of Casting for Recovery.
Richard with the next one.
Yeah, I was hooked on that one. artwork restored outside council depot. After the vegetation had got a bit out of hand, the recent clearance has revealed the modern art outside the City Council depot on Bar End Road. The two pieces were installed around 20 years ago and have stood the test of time. This is the first time they've been on clear view for a number of years. Belgarum rather likes them. They give a quirkiness to what would otherwise be a humdrum building on a major entrance to the city. The future of the depot is up in the air, but it would be good if the sculptures were retained.
It's entitled A Royal Seal of Approval for Commission. The Friends of Winchester Cathedral have been given the Royal Seal of Approval from the Queen for a piece of music commissioned to honour Her Majesty's 90th birthday in 2016, following her latest birthday celebrations, which took place last weekend. Chairman Bruce Parker received a letter from Buckingham Palace confirming that Her Majesty had given her approval for the piece of music to be named Queen Elizabeth's Winchester Carol. Mr. Parker, former presenter of BBC South Today, said, "We are delighted to hear that Her Majesty has kindly given permission for the piece to be called Queen Elizabeth's Winchester Carol." The Queen has also asked to hear a recording of the piece, which is set to be performed at the Cathedral's annual Carol concert in December. The music was commissioned for Winchester Cathedral Choir, internationally regarded as one of the great church choirs in England, and the well-known baritone and composer Roderick Williams has been chosen to write the piece. Cathedral Director of Music Andrew Lumsden said, "A new commission is always an exciting time for performers, and Roddy Williams, being a singer himself, knows how to write for voices in a most inspiring way." He added, "To have Her Majesty's seal of approval will make the first performance in our concert an even more special occasion." The commission is being funded from proceeds of the Patron's Lunch, which was held in London's Mall in the summer of 2016 for charities such as the Friends of the Cathedral, of which the Queen is a royal patron.
Thank you very much. And on now to historical items with the usual mini news clips, starting with 200 years ago, Monday, June the 15th, 1818. On Monday night, or early on Tuesday morning, some malicious people cut several trees and afterwards set fire to the premises of Mr. D. Knight at Evely Farm in the parish of Headley, which entirely consumed the outbuildings together with 6 fine cart horses and 3 calves. But very fortunately, from the timely assistance of the neighbours and a favourable wind, the dwelling house was preserved. A reward of £200 has been offered and a free pardon for the discovery of the lucendaries, and great hopes are entertained that they will shortly be brought to justice. The loss is estimated at £1,000, and we understand that notices have been served on the 100 to recover damages under the Black Act. And the second brief item of 200 years ago, at a petty session of the magistrates of this city held yesterday, a quantity of rum found in the possession of 3 dealers in spirits was condemned, being under proof.
100 years ago, Saturday, June the 15th, 1918. On Sunday, a special effort was made in the villages of Micheldever and East Stratton to assist the funds of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. At 1 o'clock, a procession consisting of representatives from the local lodges of Odd Fellows, Foresters, Reshebites and Band of Hope Society was formed, and preceded by the Sutton Scotney and Micheldever Primitive Methodist Brass Bands paraded the 2 villages. Collections were made en route. A service was held in a meadow adjoining the chapel at Micheldever, and the Reverend T. Rigg, minister for the circuit, and the Reverend A. B. Milner, vicar of Micheldever, taking part. the former opening with prayer and the latter giving an interesting address. Mr. T. Dowding, as in former years, acted as honorary secretary and arranged matters very successfully. The second part. A few weeks ago, we reported that Private C. Morant, MGC, was missing. Recently, however, his parents have received a field postcard from him, dated April the 4th, stating that he is a prisoner of war. No indication was given as to his whereabouts, and inquiries up to the present have failed to get information.
50 years ago, Saturday, June the 15th, 1968. A fairy tale enactment of a scene from Alice in Wonderland gave great pleasure to invited guests and children and their mothers from Hairstock, near Winchester, at the opening ceremony of the March Hare Public House in Priorsdean Road, Hairstock. The characters of the Dormouse, the March Hare, Duchess and Mad Hatter were played by members of the Winchester Dramatic Society, who are based at the Chesil Little Theatre. They arrived in grand style on the Courage Show Dray, drawn by two magnificent shire horses, together with Alice, 11-year-old Charlotte Poole of Farnham, who unveiled the inn sign. Alice and her entourage were welcomed by Captain R.H. Courage, a director of Courage Limited, and during the opening ceremony, the Mad Hatter poured the first pints of beer from the pub, and the March Hare raised the ale garland to the roof of the house. And secondly, a meeting of the National Union of Public Employees, NUPE, was held in the new inn, Hambledon, on Wednesday, at which Mr. G.T. Pullinger, secretary of the Bishop's Waltham branch of NUPE, was presented with the union's illuminated address by the union's area officer, Mr. Alan Shell. Presenting the award, Mr. Shell illustrated the changes which had occurred in the conditions of service and type of employment upon which country roadmen were employed when Mr. Pullinger first became branch secretary 30 years ago.
25 years ago, Friday, June the 11th, 1993. Hampshire schools joined a nationwide snub of the government's national curriculum tests this week. Over 600,000 14-year-olds through the country should have sat an English test on Monday, and the results should then have been passed to the Department of Education. But Hampshire schools either did not enforce the tests at all or administered them internally, reporting the results to the parents. Staff at schools saw the tests as invalid and time-consuming. They said the long-winded process of reporting the results to the DOV was pointless because of the nature of the tests. Head teacher of Winchester's Westgate School, Peter Jenner, said his pupils did not take the tests. He explained, "The decision follows the government's consideration of the position and staff consideration also. We share unhappiness about the nature of the tests. They add so little to what we know from our own tests. They are energy and time consuming." Pupils at King's School, Winchester, did take the tests, but the school will not be reporting the results to the DOE. Head teacher Ray Bradbury said, "We should be doing our own tests and we will report to the parents and children in the same way as we would normally. Staff do not think they are valid, and we certainly do not think they should be reported until they are considered to be valid. That is, a reasonable test of what the children have done over the last 3 years." And the second section. Explosive propane and oxygen cylinders were engulfed in flames on Wednesday when a blaze erupted at a haulage firm's yard in Morstead. Firefighters from Winchester, Twyford and Eastleigh were called to Gough's yard at 10 a.m. after two lorry cabs and a crane caught fire. A spokesman from Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service said the fire started when cutting equipment being used set fire to some diesel. The fire spread, severely damaging a crane and two lorry cabs, and engulfing one propane and three oxygen cylinders. One jet, three hose reels and two breathing apparatus sets were used, and firefighters, who stayed at the scene for about 1.5 hours, cooled the cylinders down to stop them from exploding.
Now we're going to give you what's on in and around the region over the next couple of weeks. And I have the first interesting one, which is Antiques Trip. Winchester will feature on the small screen once again after a popular BBC show announced it would be heading to the city. BBC One's Celebrity Antiques Road Trip is coming to Bellman's Auctioneers at the Red House Hyde Street for an auction later this month. Taking place on June the 28th at 10 a.m, Countryfile presenters Tom Heap and Charlotte Smith will be putting items they have collected on the way to Winchester under the hammer with celebrity auctioneer Jonathan Pratt. The auction will see items including furniture, paintings, jewellers, watches, silver, ceramics, textiles and more going under the hammer. Bellmans are inviting people to the auctions held, Bellmans are inviting people to the auctions, which is being filmed. The auction will be open to view from Friday the 22nd of June and will be fully illustrated online from June the 20th. Online bidding is available via thesellroom.com. That's via thesellroom.com. For more information and to register your interest, contact Bellman's Auctioneers at Winchester Sale Room on 01962 861 789, 01962 861 789, or email winchester at Bellman's, that's spelt BELLMANS, bellmans.co.uk. And that is all going to be happening, as I said before, on the 28th of June at 10 a.m. Moving on to the next, Claire, please.
Saturday, June the 30th, St Cross Fete, 1:30 to 5 p.m. Hospital of St Cross, St Cross Road, SO23 9SD. Entrance for adults is £3. Children are free. Assistant dogs only, please. Ample free car parking. Traditional summer fete celebrating its 150th anniversary. Wide range of stalls and games, as well as train rides and entertainment provided by Winchester Morris Men, 1st Chandler's Ford Boys Brigade Band, and Punch and Judy. Teas, cakes and ice cream available. Proceeds to church at St Cross, the Winchester Hospice and Winchester Community First Volunteers. More information from office at Parish of St Faith, all carrying on, .org.
And Hursley Park Book Fair returns next weekend with more than 40 authors, writers and editors selling and signing our work for bookworms at Hursley Park. It takes place on both Saturday and Sunday, June the 23rd and 24th. The event is free, and there'll be free on-site parking at the village's IBM campus. There'll also be giveaways and competitions for readers, both young and old, as well as question and answer sessions, refreshments, and around 100 different titles from all genre for sale.
And for the choral music, celebrated Candover Valley Choir will perform in St John's Church, Northington, on Sunday, June the 24th at 7 p.m. The concert, entitled For the Fallen, commemorates the ending of World War I, with proceeds to be donated to the Royal British Legion. Choir conductor Jane Bryant said, "We are very much looking forward to performing in the uplifting surroundings of St John's. Our concert will include music by Elgar, Daly, Mendelssohn and Ireland, and poetry by Owen, Binion and Sassoon. As we reflect on the tragedy of war, we will also be pleased to help raise funds for the excellent work of the Royal British Legion."
Thank you very much. And finally, in this section, the next piece is a Royal Marines band, which is going to be the Royal Marines Association concert band conducted by Lieutenant Colonel Chris Davis. It's headed, or its title is, Never Forgotten, which of course is very appropriate. And it's an afternoon of light music to commemorate 100 years since the armistice that brought about the end of the First World War. The details here are at Otterbourne Village Hall. It's on Sunday, the 15th of July, 2018. It's 2:30 p.m. Doors will open at 2. And the tickets are £12 unreserved, and they are to include tea or coffee. And here's the person to apply to, Mary Davis at The Gables, Park Lane, Otterbourne, Winchester. Inquiries are on 023 80 273 473. That's 023 80 273 473. And it's email mdjs77 at gmail.com. And cheques are made payable to the Royal Marines Association Concert Band, and include a stamped addressed envelope for return of tickets by post. And that's all that we have for you on What's On This Week. Thank you very much. Right, before the general news, we're going to give you the lighting up times, and here they are. It's starting on Saturday, the 16th of June. The sun will set at 9:22 p.m. And on Wednesday, the 20th of June, the sun will rise at 4:50 a.m. and will set at 9:24 p.m. So now we are moving on to the general news. And Peter, can we have your first article, please?
Yep, mine is entitled Royal Honour for City Homeless Charity. Staff at a Winchester charity have been celebrating a month of royal engagements that involved praise for their work in the city. Homelessness charity Trinity Winchester was invited to Buckingham Palace, where they received the Queen's Award for voluntary service. Chief Executive Sue McKenna and volunteer Nicola Butcher attended the awards at Buckingham Palace. Nicola said, "It was so exciting to be able to represent Trinity for the Queen's Award for voluntary service. The award is an incredible achievement for the charity, and well deserved. I have been volunteering there for a couple of years, and the work that all of the staff and volunteers do to support homeless and vulnerable people is truly life-changing." The accolade, the highest award given to volunteer groups, was created by the Queen in 2002 to mark her Golden Jubilee, and celebrates the impact voluntary groups have on the country. Trinity, based at Bradbury House in Durngate, was one of 250 organisations to receive the award. The visit to Buckingham Palace followed an invitation to the royal wedding last month. Volunteer Tom Watson attended as an official spectator with his wife Jenny. Tom, who helps run the charity's job club and serves breakfasts to homeless and rough sleepers on Saturdays, said, "It was an honour for me to be invited by the Lord Lieutenant to attend the royal wedding on behalf of Trinity Winchester. The royal couple had identified services for homeless people in their own patronage of charities, so Trinity Winchester was chosen for the country as an organisation to be represented." Tom said the royal wedding was one of the best organised events he had ever attended, and all of the official spectators were given a real welcome by Windsor Castle staff. "It was a personal privilege to attend, and it was also an honour for all the volunteers and staff of Trinity Winchester to be acclaimed in this way." The charity has announced plans for £1.5 million extension at its Durngate base to build flats for 11 previously homeless people.
County faces a further £80 million cut. Hampshire will need to save another £80 million by 2021, the council has announced, a year before an £140 million budget gap was due to be bridged. Leader Roy Perry says the authority now faces an increasingly difficult balancing act to reduce its spending. Civic chiefs add they will need to consider future costs to meet the shortfall, which has come from continuing demographic pressures, inflation, and government grant reductions. The council has already tightened its belt dramatically as it tried to save an anticipated budget shortfall of £140 million by April 2019. Among the services hit by the cuts are social care, school crossing patrols, subsidised bus services and community transport. The authority is also currently consulting on saving £700,000 by cutting public transport and switching off streetlights. Councillor Perry said, "We're going to have to prepare to take some tough decisions on how to plug this gap. We now face an increasingly difficult balancing act in trying to meet residents' needs, given the backdrop of diminishing budgets and rising demand for services. Over the last decade, we've had to make a lot of changes to the way we work, and we'll continue to do that, to exploit every new opportunity to give our residents the best possible value for their money. County Council must live within its means to avoid the type of financial crises now befalling other councils, as these threaten to jeopardise the critical and everyday type of local government services we all depend upon. Through our strong financial management and the prudent use of reserves over the years, the County Council is still better placed than many other authorities to withstand future pressures and sustain local services." However, Romsey Liberal Democrat Councillor Mark Cooper, who's fought the closure of services, has blamed the government for cutting its grant to local authorities. He said, "Hampshire and its residents are the victims of the current government's obsession with cutting public spending. Effectively, by cutting grants to local authorities, the government is hoping that Hampshire and other local authorities will get the blame for the loss of so many services that we currently value. It's a cynical ploy, but that's what happens when there's a Conservative government in London. And it's going to get a lot worse as Brexit brings about a major recession followed by a slump in tax revenues. You can guarantee that when services cease, it's the poor and the pressured middle who suffer, not the rich who run this government."
Free pizza to mark opening. A new restaurant in Winchester city centre has been giving away free pizza to celebrate its opening. Three Joe's Sado Pizza on Great Minster Street gave away one free pizza to every customer last night. No tricks, no traps, every pizza on the menu is free. Three Joe's opened on Monday, June the 11th, for a soft launch with its official opening last night. The owners promise fresh, high-quality pizza made to order using local ingredients straight from a wood-fired oven. The restaurant is in one of the premier locations in the city centre, only a stone's throw away from the cathedral. It was formerly La Place Restaurant and Froggy's Bar, which closed last summer.
And now a different take, a proposal to tackle pigeon problem. A clean-up has launched to remove bird mess from the streets of Winchester. As part of a City Council strategy to control pigeons, the new approach will include cleansing, focusing on six places every 2 months. However, in the case of the Buttercross and Guildhall entrance, cleansing will occur bi-monthly. The Council is also working with Winchester BID to encourage businesses to remove food waste from outdoor seating areas. The council will talk to businesses to promote measures to reduce the number of pigeons roosting on buildings. Councillor Jan Warwick, portfolio holder for the environment, said, "We're aware pigeons are a problem, especially in specific areas of the city centre. We're committed to ensuring that we protect and enhance our historic city centre, and we have agreed a series of measures." It follows Historic England granting permission for cleaning on the Buttercross, with light jet washing used at the remaining sites. The locations, notorious for bird droppings, including the Royal Oak Passage, Hammond Passage, St Lawrence's Passage and King's Walk, will be monitored for 6 months, after which further measures may be taken.
Austin descendant pledges support to campaign. A campaign to protect historic Chawton House has received a boost from the descendant, I think that must be, of one of Hampshire's most famous authors. Caroline Knight, author of Jane and Me, My Austin Heritage, and Jane Austen's fifth great-niece, has pledged support to Chawton House's hashtag brick by brick campaign. The appeal was launched in November and has raised almost £25,000, but more is urgently needed to help support Jane Austen's great house. Chawton House in Chawton was the home of Jane's brother when she lived in the village. After buying a brick, Mrs. Knight said, "Chawton House must be preserved for future generations to enjoy, and with our support, it could become a major cultural destination celebrating early women's writing in the setting of the ancestral estate so significant to Jane Austen and her family."
Garden centres up for sale. The UK's largest garden centre operator is up for sale. Wyvale, which has centres in Cadnam and Fair Oak, has been put on the market by the private equity firm Terra Firma. The firm has 145 centres ranging in size from 1 to 108 acres. The business has enjoyed exceptionally strong sales in recent weeks, with a record-breaking May Day bank holiday weekend. The fortunes of the business have revived since it made a £122 million loss in 2016. I beg your pardon, 2016. I apologise for that. Property firm Christie and Co. is handling the sale. Steve Roddell, Managing Director, Retail, at Christie and Co., said the sale created a unique opportunity for a wide range of buyers from financial institutions, existing garden centre operators, independent business people and entrepreneurs to buy well-infested local garden centres within the price range of £200,000 to £35 million.
And that concludes our extracts from the Hampshire Chronicles for you this week. We'd like to say thanks to all the support teams for their preparation and dispatch of this edition, to our editors, Gordon and Liz, and of course many thanks to our readers, Claire.
Bye.
Richard.
Bye.
And Peter.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us, Peter. And from me, until the next time. Before we go, there is another reminder for you. Mary Davis is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again is 020-380-273473. So it really is goodbye from me, Roz, until the next time. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible? Thank you very much for listening, and do enjoy this lovely weather spell we're having. Take care and goodbye until next time.